Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what happened is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
All right, today's jump-off topic here on It's My House is how much versus how many? How much versus how many? And this really comes to about, I guess, income, personal income, or even business revenue. I know of a person, now the person who inspired this, he identifies with how much money he can charge a person for a half hour or an hour worth of his time with what he does in his profession. But you can do the same. Oh, let me give up. He gives music lessons, so he charges so much per hour. Now, and of course, it's typically it could be I think it's $90 per hour for a lesson, and now he sort of has to share that, not sort of, because he works for a company that actually does the advertising and the marketing. They get the students, and then he does the teaching. So they might charge $90, and he'll get a certain amount of that, and then the administrator, the people who, you know, marketed the lessons and whatnot, they get a share as well. Now, so he makes so much per hour on one individual student per hour, whereas now that's the how much side of things, but I fish a little bit differently. I like to go fishing with nets. So it's, I don't get into the how much. I get into the how many. So using that same business model, well, he has what I would call the single line business model. Whereas with nets, instead of charging $90, for, you know, for an hour's lesson. Let's say if I drop that down to, dropped it down from $90 an hour to, let's say, $10 an hour, I got 50 students, then that's $500 for the same hour. So I think it's just, I'm just putting this philosophy out here. Think about that. What's more advantageous to you? How much per hour, and you got one fish on a line? Whereas if you just charge $10 or a lower price and you've got, you know, a substantial more amount of fish on your within your net, because I think it's easier and it's better to fish with nets than a single line. And with nets, you can go deep into the water, and when you go deep into the water, there's more fish. So, and you can apply that principle to anything in life. Okay, let's see. Yeah. All right. Okay, well. And with that in mind, we're going to start organizing maybe a 1 to 2 day event that we'll do a live stream, and that live stream will include a visual part where you'll actually see us, and hopefully you, whoever you are, and where we're building, and you'll see different locations. So it could be somebody in Florida, another person in Georgia, another person in Chicago, another person in Washington State, maybe somebody in Asia, somebody in Africa. We all see, you know, these different people in different locations building tiny houses, tiny off-grid houses. So we're going to do, we're going to pick about one, it was going to take the majority of the month to organize this. So we want to do at least 1 to 2 of those a month. Now everything is building up to those live events where people are actually building, making money, and all, you know, all the things that go along with it. So we have to, I know one thing, we got to have the right visuals with it, because all I got, well, I got this smartphone, but I can't build and operate the smartphone at the same time. Plus, I have some questions. So I'll be in touch with people during this holiday season. Today's just Wednesday. So I just, bam, bam, you know what, just, you know what, because we might have to organize We want to really show people the power of 1 hour. So, anyway, more on that. And I'll be reaching out to people today and all this week. Okay, let me go back to studio here. That's all I got on my end for today, but you guys might have something, so I'm trying to find my way back to the studio here, okay? Let's see. If I was using a laptop, which I'm not, as easy to the guide, but I'm using my trusty smartphone, which is sort of like Batman's utility belt. Okay, let's see. Let's go to the phone lines here. 309, your mic is open.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. Definitely, I've been up and running since 5:30 this morning, but I've had some great conversations, some great meetings already today. Had some last night as well. And I do believe we might have some other people in the queue this morning. The president of PICTV. Is going to be, they got 60 channels, and he is going to come on today. We had a real good interaction last night. What was so beautiful is, as we had this group coming together, I've already met like 90% of the room that was in there.
Okay.
So it was just beautiful. Just beautiful, you know, how everything's been coming together all together. So it's kind of like how we came together. So, I wanted to bring some more people to the panel. Get your podcast out there.
All right. Anybody that wants to join in the conversation, just if you're already in the studio, just press 1 and we'll patch you in. Matter of fact, well, I got to find my studio again. Give me a moment. Okay, let's see. Yeah, let's press 1 and we'll patch into the the conversation. And by the way, out in California, there was an earthquake in Northern California, registered over 6 points on a Richter scale. And
oh,
two
really?
People, I just read that a few minutes ago. 240, area code, your mic is open.
Hey, thank you. This is Dave Evans, President of TV Network, Washington, D.C. Happy to be on for the first time. Thank you, Chris. I love to be around people who are talking about education, inspiration, information, and just a wonderful blessing. If you ever in Washington, D.C., let me know. We eat a steak, we have good breakfast, and I'll treat you real good. I want to say happy holidays to everybody again. Pick TV Network, we are Roku, R-O-K-U. If you have that Roku TV, go to the search bar and put in the PIC TV Network, and we have business channels, which we bring people on like you guys, talk about your business or a show, really a TV channel and show I created called Hello America, like America. You come on and talk about anything. I create TV shows and programs and air them on my network with 60 channels. We got some new lineups for 2023, and hopefully you guys can check us out, www.watchpicktv.com, or you can text PIC TV 542-44. Yeah. So just thank you for this opportunity. Thank you again, Chris. I'll be back.
All right, so now you're in Washington, D.C. Now, you say you produce TV shows, right?
Yeah, I create TV shows, and I also air them on a network. So I think that's the double blessing is not only do we create a TV show or commercial or program or movie, anything, and we air them on our network. It's a win-win. So we don't have to search where you're going to play your record. If we own the studio, we own the record company, we own the radio network, we will always play. We're going to play yours, except if we made yours. So I think that's the blessing of Pick TV. We create, we make, and we play. A lot of times when people do projects, they have to search for somebody to play this stuff, whether it's TV One or ESPN or NBC or ABC or Disney or Fox, and a lot of time they turn them down. We don't have that problem. We make and we play.
Okay. Well, D.C., there's a lot up there to, in that metro area. Which I think they're trying to turn D.C. into another Manhattan. But because they've really gentrified up that way.
Yeah, man, I've been here 60 years.
Over
I think.
The last 20 years or so.
Yep. Yep. And I think when you've been here and you've seen it, you know, I've been in the city since the 60s. That's where I grew up. I was really born in 62, and I've been here all my life. You can't tell me one place about D.C., one spot that I don't know about. And also, I've been blessed to work at HUD, United States Housing and Urban Development, for 12 years. So I know about beautification. I know about grant money. I know about first-time home buyers. I know about building. I know about all that stuff. Faith-based, all of those good things, man. So I can't wait to talk to Chris so we can work even more.
Now, were you born in D.C.? You were born in D.C.?
Yes, sir.
Freeman's Hospital?
No, mine was Columbia Hospital, 1962. Ah,
Columbia's Hospital for Women. Yeah, they closed that down.
Yep, yep.
I remember when it was open. Yeah, I was born at Freedom. I was born at Freedom's, but I remember Columbia. That was a hospital for women. And I was kind of surprised when they closed that one down. Because they also closed down the one over there in D.C. General, didn't they, over in Southeast?
Yeah, that one's gone, man. And they got brand new condos. They got million-dollar condos.
Oh, they put condos
there
up there?
Yeah, million-dollar condos. Right by the Redskins
Stadium. Oh, there, I used to call it it used to be called D.C. Stadium, then RFK Stadium. So they put condos over there. Million-dollar condos?
$1 million. And if you move out, you ain't getting back. I just set the system up.
You're right about that. You're right about that. Well, what about over what did they do over at Berry Farms?
Berry Farms looked like Rockville. Looked like you in Manhattan. Berry Farms, all of that stuff that was old school that we grew up and knew about, projects, it's gone. It's gone. That stuff that's going to be condos.
Now, hold on. Did they leave the big chair? You know where the big chair is, right?
Yep, that's still there. But
hopefully they left that landmark there.
Yeah, but the thing is, the whole area is revitalized, which means old school that we know, people walking around at night having a good time. It's not, you can eat off the streets there. I literally drove in there last week and surprised about 1 o'clock to see nobody. It's a ghost town. In the daytime, it comes alive. At night, when we were growing up, it was the opposite. You would see people out there, you know, talking on the corner, drinking, smoking, you know, messing around. Those streets, you can eat off the streets.
Well, you're all right. Well, I'm going to keep in touch with you, man, because you are absolutely right. I grew up over in, I'm in Florida right now, though. Riggs Park over there by the Fort Todd Metro Station.
I know exactly what it is.
And it's Northeast D.C.
Yeah.
And my next door neighbor, she's like 101. Her kids put her in a nursing home or something like that. And then they sold the house. And
mm-hmm.
the house sold for over $600,000. And you're absolutely right, because she only had two children, but her grandkids and her great-grandkids, they don't have that kind of money to move into D.C.
Nope.
So, but you absolutely nope. right. I like to put together something on that. I have a Clubhouse channel, which I'm I think I got 100 people now. I think I'm going to launch it officially, called Don't Sell Mama's House or Don't
wow.
Sell Grandma's House. Because
wow.
When you said once you sell it, you're not going to get back in.
Nope.
Unless you got some real serious cash to get back in. And, but man, that's mind blowing over there by where DC General Hospital was, and they closed that down many years ago. $1 million condos, man.
Yeah, $1 million condos. You feel like E.F. Hutton. You got people who businesses. Tom Warner. You won't know it. You go over to Berry Farms, or you go over to where you're talking about. Even Riggs Park. All of that stuff. Money people.
Right.
Millionaires. Millionaires. Businesses. Bringing their friends. I'm watching right now as we're talking, over at Crystal City, the Amazon. Brand new headquarters coming up, $5 billion, not million, $5 billion. That building's going to be finished in the next 2 years. It's 10 blocks long. It's so big, you have to put two buildings in one with a bridge in the middle. It's amazing, man. So when you bring all this money to the city, millionaires to the city, just think about the property that's going to skyrocket when Amazon comes here. It's the poor people. There's no way for them.
Now,
to
what part of town are they gonna put Amazon in?
It's already up. It's still not open. It's over in Crystal City, right over when you cross the bridge.
Oh, all right, over in Virginia, Northern Virginia. Then okay.
Yeah, when you cross the bridge,
okay.
right there. As soon as you cross the 14th Street Bridge from Washington D.C., you can see it. It's right there. I mean, it's. Not even a hop, skip, and a jump. Just that Amazon.
Man, you're right. Right over that 14th Street Bridge. You're right. That's Crystal City, Virginia.
Yeah, and it's nowhere. Like I said, it's nowhere for the poor to go. If you are in a location like my mother's house before she passed away in 98, my dad, 1014 Spring Road, the biggest house on the block. My father was paying back in the 60s, probably $139 a month for rent, $139 a month for rent or that house. No. That house right now, and I'm so sad that out of 9 kids, we sold that property when my parents died, because that house is worth almost over $500,000 or more, way over $1 million or more, Spring Road.
Right.
Over $1 million. So, yeah, you move out, you can't move in. The system is designed to get the poor people out, to bring the middle class and rich people in. And sad to say,
yeah, those property tax in D.C. are no joke. No joke.
Yeah. And I'm going to leave you with this. Over where the Nats Stadium is, this is where the Nats play. This is where they have the brand new soccer stadium.
I know where that is. Uh-huh.
Buzzers Point, that's where all the poor people and projects were 20, 30 years ago.
Right.
That was called Buzzers Point. That's when you came to D.C. and you were poor, you moved in Buzzers Point like Skid Row. That area today is $1 million. It's the fastest growing property in America. If you move down in Southwest Washington, D.C., because I was 12 years, and I saw them. The waterfront. Remember the wharf?
Yeah.
The Wharf, the waterfront. That place is like Las Vegas now. Literally.
Yeah, I heard they got rid of the seafood restaurants that were down there, Phillips and all that. Flagship, I heard they got rid of all that.
Man, if you go down there today, you'll see 20, 30 hotels, skyboxes. It looked like Las Vegas. All that stuff that you saw back in the day was just open area. Not no more.
Uh-huh.
Just buildings beside buildings beside buildings. It's like Las Vegas. You blink your eye and you won't believe it. But I saw it coming. I saw them building that area. And I didn't know that it would be that beautiful and that expensive. You go down there. I mean, you got 10, 15, 20 blocks of just skyboxes and hotels, just like Las Vegas. And this was a poor area back when we were growing up, especially when you're talking about where the Nat Stadium is now and the soccer stadium.
Right.
You have everything over there is $1 million. Literally. Everything. Whole Foods is there.
Yeah, D.C. Well, all right. Now, what about it's on right on Pennsylvania Avenue, but I know when they put a Teeter Harris grocery over there, this is well over 10 years ago. Potomac Gardens, is that still there?
Area's changing, too. There's not going to be no poor earth in D.C. If you go down Rhode Island Avenue is the Gold Coast now. They got the big cranes there.
Oh, come on, man. Are you serious? Hold on. Now, Rhode Island Avenue, all right, I know they did a lot of development. I haven't been in D.C. in 3 years, and I got a house in D.C. I have friends that go in and out of it just to keep on it. But Rhode Island Avenue by the Rhode Island Avenue subway station, metro station as they call it. And then I know they had a shopping center there with a Home Depot and I think it's either a Giant or Safeway, one of the two up in there. And I know they got rid of they used to have what they called tourist homes. I don't know if they still got those there. And they got rid of the used car lots on Rhode Island Avenue all the way up to Route 1 in the Hyattsville. So, I mean, now what's changed? So it's the Gold Coast now?
Man, you said you haven't been here in 3 years.
I haven't been here in three years.
Per day. The church I used to attend or still connect with is called Greater Mount Calvary, one of the biggest churches in the city.
I probably drove past here a gazillion times.
Yep. That church, you can't even see it. They're building so big around it. It's like a storefront. I was culturally shocked when I drove up there and I said, where's the church at? Because it was the biggest thing in the block, the biggest church in the block. But they built it. They're building like the monument and the Empire State Building right beside it, so you can't even see it. Everything up there, it's the Gold Coast. From Rutland Avenue from the start to the finish, all the way up to Hyattsville, where College Park is and the kids go to school. It's this multi-millionaire. This is like if me and you were billionaires, and we say, you know what, I want you to build me a million-dollar building here. And you know what, I'm going to build one, too, right beside the door. Then we're going to build in the next block. Then Chris said, I'm going to build one, too. And next thing you know, we got the whole stretch. That's what they're doing, man.
Man.
And where does that leave the poor people? Where does that leave the elderly, the hospitals, the schools, the community, the environment? It's so sad because I've been here 60 years of my life.
Yeah,
I've been in Washington. I know from the Capitol to the White House. Everything. And I used to drive for Uber too. When I drove for Uber 4 years ago, there was an area on M Street where you would get shot at night. You drive down there.
I know M Street Northwest.
Yep, 11th and M Street, you get shot because people down there was on drugs and they was having sex and they were out there stealing and stuff. You would never drive down there at night. So I'm driving for Uber. And I got upper-class, middle-class people from Springfield, Virginia, going downtown to have a good time. And they said, can you drop me off to M Street? I said, you really want to go to M Street? And I drove them down there and drove in the alley. The alley was so clean, you can eat off the streets. That stuff is not like that no more. That stuff is not like that no more. They got Italian restaurants now in the alleys with, like New York, just like you said, Manhattan. It's just like,
right.
So I'm here, and I didn't know, because I haven't drove down that way in so long, and I was like scared, because I'm thinking about in the 90s and 80s how it was. But today, I dropped those people off in the alley on M Street where you would get shot 15, 20 years ago. Now that place clean as a whistle. Clean as a whistle. They're partying there at
okay.
night. Mm-hmm. If you go to the street, I believe you this U Street looked like the Mardi Gras. And you know U Street was a terrible place in the 80s and 90s. But U Street now,
oh yeah, man, they have 14th and 14th and you and all that I remember when the prostitutes and pimps were all down that way. And the last time I was in D.C., which was about 3 years ago, you know, I went to, because I love chili dogs, but, you know, Ben's is my spot. And I like to go to the original Ben's Chili Bowl. Okay.
Yep.
Man, I came up out the subway. I looked across the street, and the total demographic. Now, Ben's used to be all black folks. Okay.
Yep.
But the total demographics have changed, and they have people wrapped around all up and down. I said, man, I like chili dogs, but I ain't waiting that long. So, I went off. The airport's got a Ben's Chili Bowl now. So, and they got a Ben's Chili Bowl over on 8th Street Northeast, which I was surprised how much that's changed over. You know, even then, it was parts of D.C., that I thought I knew, that I didn't know. So I guess you're right. When I come back again, I'm not going to recognize a whole bunch of stuff.
You can't, man. I live here, and I've been here. And every time I go to an area, just like 14th Street, like you said, 14th or Park Road, Urban Street, man, that's where I walk to go to school at.
Right.
You zoom back to the future today. That place looks like Beverly Hills. That's all that area up there, multi-million-dollar businesses came in and just drove things different, man. It's like, you know, I mean, it's just so different because.
Well, tell me this now. Over in Southeast, over there by the big chair, now is Union Temple Baptist Church with Willie Wilson still in? Is he still there?
Yeah, they're still there, but the area, see, what they did, they make it so hard because the parking is crazy. And
yeah, the park's got to be crazy around there now.
It's crazy. And then the thing is, if you bring in million-dollar businesses, they have a plan to buy you out to get you out. That's the whole – that's why Berry Farms and all this other stuff we're talking about, they've been planning this stuff for the last 25 or 30 years. It's like you got to plan the bill. And you got people with money. You got greed and you got money. You got people coming to the city and they know how to go downtown, apply for stuff and get money places and have people who they know to get $100,000, $200,000, $500,000, $1 million. And you got friends on that level. You got friends around you who know the game. That man, here's the money, get the place, do your thing. When people find out the game and they know how that game is played, and the poor people who don't know, or the underprivileged people who don't know, they get left out. Because if me and you on the on association for the community, and we say, you know what, I'm on the ANC commission, and you on the commission, so let's plan for the next 10 years to make some changes around here. We're going to bring in Whole Foods. We're going to bring in Bank of America. We're going to bring in Chase. We're just going to come in here and just for the next 5 years, we're going to revitalize this whole area. There it is. What about the
You know what? I was up on over in the Petworth area, and I saw a not too far from Roosevelt High School, but on George Avenue, there was a Whole Foods there.
Yeah.
Like, which I was kind of surprised to see that there. And then it used to be a strip joint there, Foxy Playground or something like that. That's gone.
Yeah.
And they had a farmer's market there too. And I was surprised to see a farmer's market about a block away from the Whole Foods. So, and that area was like a middle-class neighborhood all the time. But it's just the demographics changed. The Whole Foods is there.
Yep.
I'm glad you got this channel because I like to come up with something because, like, I know the demographics back in the 70s, D.C. was 70% African-American. Now, last I read, I haven't read it in a while, was they're down to, like, either 39% or in the 40s, somewhere around there.
It's diminishing, you know, and I'm just so amazed, man, because I've seen it with my own eyes. I've seen the poverty areas turn into prosperity areas. Anytime you take Buzzard's Point, just think about this. Buzzard's Point is the lowest, it's Skid Row. It's where poor people go when they come to D.C. to get a place to live in the projects. You tear down those places and put up, you tear down those places and you put in multi-million-dollar, I mean, they're not stadium. You know how many people come over there and spend money? And then the soccer stadium right beside that? Then you got the Marriott Hotel coming there. You got the Holiday Inn right there. You got everything down there, CVS, all of these Bank of America's money is coming. Subway. So here it is.
Right.
You got people now in that area. How can you come back, man? How can you come back?
Well, you gotta come back in with some heavy money. Like the people that bought my neighbor's house, the house was on the market for about a week, and the people that bought it were was an Asian family that owned nail salons.
Yep.
And they had the $600,000 plus cash to buy. So it's like you said when you at the beginning, it's if you have, I mean, the average 20 something, 30 something, 40 something, even 50 something might not have $600,000 liquid to buy. So you're absolutely right. Once you sold, more than likely, you're not going to get back in.
Yeah. I would say 100%, not 90%, because once you sell in D.C. and you go out of that, the property is going to skyrocket, first of all, and then you won't even qualify. My mother's house right near 1014 Spring Road Northwest, I rode by there, right across the street from the house that we used to live at was a place that they used to go in there and help people. And it was so small, man, you could walk on one side. When I go over there, the whole block has been overtaken on the other side of the street with that facility. So somebody invested some money or something happened where sponsors came in to give us the whole block. That when I say block, I don't mean this. I mean this whole street.
Now, because I'm thinking about a TV programming. So hold it. Give me your name again.
David Evans, like Bob Evans. David Evans.
Got it. David Evans. Okay. I'm taking my notes in because I'll be in touch with you. Because, I figure there's an information void there that a lot of the people that grew up in the city, they don't know how to maneuver in this, how to keep hold on the property or anything like that. So, I think if that information is out there, you know, but you're right, they've come through, like, I haven't been there in 3 years. I like to have people that go in and check in on a house like 2-3 times a week. Now, you know what, but it's not just happening in the D.C. It's happening in other places as well. But because D.C. geographically isn't that big, but like I said, last time I was there, I didn't recognize a lot of places, almost in my own neighborhood. They put a Walmart up there, Five Guys. They put it in front of Backus. Used to be Backus in high school. They put another complex.
Remember St. Elizabeth? You remember St. Elizabeth when you were growing up?
Man. I used to drive past there all the time. Yeah.
Man, that St. Elizabeth is like a million-dollar mall now. They put a WNBA stadium arena there where people come and see the basketball games. So that place now used to be the a slum area. Scared to go over there. Not no more.
Now with the hospital though, did they leave St. E's intact?
No, man, they don't want that over there. FEMA is right across the street.
Oh, they moved them out then. Okay.
They moved them out. Because see, the thing is, when you building the White House and you building all those monuments, you don't bring that here. When you come in to sightsee and move out. You know, so that what they did was bring money people in there, bring businesses in there, and don't have nothing for the poor people to pee around. That's why you can go down Good Hope Road tonight at 11 o'clock and nobody's on the street. I mean, that place, when we were growing up, you know, you go over there at night, man, it's live. You'll see a lot of African-Americans hanging on the smoking, drinking, having a good time. Man, that place looked like you on Pennsylvania Avenue by the White House. Nobody. But they planned it.
What is this? The Langston Golf Course, which is right across the street from over there by Phelps. I forgot the name of that elementary school that was there, but Spingarn was on the corner. I know they closed Spingarn down. Yep. Have they repurposed that building at Spingarn yet?
No, all of those schools, man, are coming, and I used to work for Marriott Charter High School. It's becoming high schools. In that area over there, Benning Road, you right by the stadium. Right by the ROF.
Yeah, over there by the River Terrace neighborhood, yeah.
Yeah. See, the planning committee, and I'm going to end with this. The planning committee for these areas and communities come in, they got a 10-year plan, 5-year plan, 3-year plan. But the plan is not with us. The plan is not with middle-class people. It's to bring in, we need to bring in Whole Foods. We need to bring in Walmart. We need to bring in Target. We need to bring in Chick-fil-A. So when you bring in those companies like that who are million-dollar companies, guess what? They're not appealing to poor people.
No.
They're trying to money people. They want people with money.
They extended the boundaries of Capitol Hill. And, you know, I know it went to Capitol Hill Extended over there by Eastern High School.
Yep.
And, you know, all the way to the stadium. That's what they consider Capitol Hill, so.
Yep. Chris, you going to say something, Chris?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, talking about bringing in the money, you know, it costs more money to keep the people down than it does to pick them up. And once you pick them up, when people make money, they spend money. That is economy. And that is going to drive everything in the upwards. have not start getting the things they need. So those things you need are going to bring economy up. But at the same time, these people are doing something positive, and that's bringing up the city. So they don't need to look at it as poor and rich. They need to bring poverty to prosper. And that's, you know, what we're trying to do here. You know, we want to work with the people that have nothing, but also I want to work with the people that have. Because the ones that have can help the other ones get what they need so everybody can have what they want.
That's true. All right, well, Mr. Evans, I thank you for the info. I got your number. I'm going to lock it in my phone. You'll be hearing from me this week. Because you're right. If I land in D.C. right now, I might not. Like I said, I barely recognize the last summer, and I grew up in D.C. So
I can't.
Isn't that crazy?
My son lives in Hollywood, California. He came home for the weekend, for the Christmas holiday season. When I picked him up at Reagan National Airport a week ago, he said, "Dad, what's going on? They're building here. They're building this." And you see the big cranes. When you come to D.C., I want you to ride down Rolling Avenue, see all those big cranes and see, you know, J.D. Edwards and all these bands. When you see that coming into a particular area, you know construction brings building. Construction brings all of this stuff
right.
coming in. And when you see those big cranes, something is coming. And not only that, Chris, if we're not in on let's be a part of the investment part, how can I get jobs? How can I get people in? How can we get buy into the National Harbor or what's going on at the Reagan National Airport? How can we come in and be a part of something? We have to get in those meetings. We have to mix and mingle. We have to have a plan,
yes.
like Chris was talking about. We have to be a part of the building process. God is not building no more land. The land is already here. There's not more real estate. This is land that's already here. But how can we capitalize and say, you know what, we're going to bring something in. We want to either partner with you guys, or we wanted to buy some property, we wanted to be here to try to build, just like what you
that
guys are doing.
Sure. That won't happen. Yeah. Won't happen.
Well, that's why we're not going to look at the two
Carlos,
everybody.
Carlos, what's your take on it? Yeah, Carlos, what's your take
on
it?
Well, you guys are talking about my old stomping grounds. I grew up, you know, my family immigrated to 9th Street Northeast. In
yep.
66.
Hey, Carlos, what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, David. I was getting ready to call you at 11:30, and I didn't realize that you were here with Brother Chris on the show. What an incredible room you had last night, and so awesome to meet you. But, no, hearing you guys reminiscing about D.C., you know, causes me to reminisce because, you know, we lived in 9th Street Northeast. I
yep.
went to St. Anthony Catholic School there on the corner. It was right next to
the
public school.
Oh, man, you
school.
Went to St. Anthony's? Right on 12th and Monroe. Okay.
Yep. I used to walk, you know where Turkey Thicket Park is?
Yeah. I used to play ball there.
Yeah, we lived in some little townhouses right off Turkey Thicket Park, and we used to walk to school every day, and we would walk past the public school in order to get to St. Anthony's School. And I'm telling you, back then, I wouldn't have survived in that public school. You know, it was a really, you know, really, really poor. Of course, when you're in a low tax district, you get the worst teachers because they can't afford to pay them. You know, it's literally a public service for them. And we walked by there and you know, our parents, we were lucky enough that my mom worked for the Organization of American States. She was a secretary there, and she could afford to, you know, to my parents were divorced, but she was able to provide so that we could go to that Catholic school. And then by third grade, we were able to move to Silver Spring, Maryland, where I grew up. And then I joined the Air Force at 18 and then lived in California for 20 years. So everything you're talking about, I know exactly what you're talking about. There's places in D.C. that if you went there at night, you were going to get shot. you know, I mean, really, really bad situations. Like you said, M Street was nothing but hookers and you know, a few strip clubs, but mostly a lot of prostitution. It was just, you know, it's amazing. You know, it blew me away how much it's changed. Like Brother Dave was talking about, that whole area now by the water. My gosh, there's like these gigantic restaurants. You know, yeah, it's hard to imagine what's been transformed. I heard Silver Spring has also had a huge transformation as well.
I heard that too. I heard like downtown Silver Spring, like where Georgia and Randolph Roads are. Now I heard they got a shelter down there. I heard it's going downhill instead of going up.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, not surprising, because you know what happens, right? You guys talked about it, the gentrification. I worked at Nixon Peabody Law Firm there in Washington, D.C., right across from the FBI building. And they had their urban development department, and they were representing both the banks and the construction people. I don't know how the heck they did that, to tell you the truth, but they were working both sides of the deal. And basically, you know, they were coming in and you know, revamping, quote, the bad areas and you know, redoing the condos. And then, of course, the people that live there can no longer afford to live there, and they get pushed out, you know, into Silver Spring, even Olney, you know, even further. And then on top of that, they put a tax on the freeway. So, you know, like if you pay $35, you can skip the line going to D.C., you know, and it's just a vicious cycle, you know, because then the people that don't have anything, now they have to commute an hour, you know, to work in D.C., commuted another hour to work and, you know, to go back home for less pay. You know, it's something
you're right, Carlos. And you know what? Riding on that metro every day adds up.
Riding on the metro. I mean, just think of the way our society is set up right now. You know, you look at the really poor areas. There's a liquor store in every corner, right? That's a fact. There's a liquor store in every corner. And then on top of that, the people that are living in these depressed areas have to come in to work in the city because there's no jobs in the city. I mean, in where they're at. So now they have to commute all the way over there to do some job and come back. And then how are they supposed to afford a Whole Foods and organic food and you know, what, you know, what's healthy? So of course there's fast food and McDonald's, and this leads to diabetes and health problems, which is all part of the whole entire, you know, the whole entire system that is just making money off of depressing people. You know, this is why I think, you know, I really believe that the problem does not want to be solved, because there's too many people with money that do not want to solve the problem because they're making money from the problem. You know,
Chris,
and then they'll move out and gentrify the next ghetto, right, and drive people even further. And that just keeps happening. That's just what keeps happening.
Chris,
just sad.
Think about, because you know, like I know, there's no poor areas in D.C. no more. When you think about, when you have a budget point, and I got to say this one more time. I worked at HUD for 12 years, downtown, and I've seen the big cranes coming in. I've seen down Wharf, all these big sky boxes and high rises. I've seen poor people down at Buzzard Point in the projects. I've been there. And today, when you ride down, it's only million-dollar property. But my question, Chris, where does the poor people go? Where do the people from the projects go?
They go further out. They go further out to, like, Olney. I think they've moved as far as Olney, Maryland now, and imagine the commute from Olney to D.C.
A lot of them gone to Hagerstown. A lot of them gone to Hagerstown.
Yeah, they're pushed out, you know, into the rural areas, and then to find work, they have to come back into the city. You know, it's really sad.
It is, and I go a step beyond that. I say they push them to the grave. I say because look at where we are today, Chris. Me and you, we're blessed and we're still struggling. I know I am.
Me too.
And yeah, we still think about them who had hardly nothing at first. That's why they're trying to play the lottery. That's why they're trying to get the thing. There is no only money because guess what? The movement only today, you better have $100,000, $200,000, and you better have good credit. We know that. Mm-hmm. Take this town, whatever. You bet. Now, you forced to move in with the kids now. Kids are taking care of their parents now. That's why it was very important for us to teach the generation connection, to teach our kids. One day you may have to do the same thing I'm doing for you one day. Because that's the world.
But that's not a bad thing. I think kids taking care of their families, it's, you know, something in my culture. You know, I'm from Ecuador, and, you know, we take care of our families, you know, because, you know, think about it, the elder knowledge, that's how it gets passed down. If you don't have the young kids interfacing with the grandparents, that knowledge doesn't get transferred. And you know, this is what we're losing. We're losing, you know, knowledge, you know, that our grandparents had. It's very, very important that you know, the kids that are growing up now, you know, learn the value of family and learn the value of taking care of their family. Because, you know, I quickly found out, you know, I was stressing, you know, over money, you know, how am I going to pay this? How am I going to pay that? And I just realized, I'm like, there's people right now living on the street that would give a kidney to have my problems. You know, you've heard the term first world problems, right? And finally, when I just sort of gave up and said, you know what, I'm willing to lose every single thing that I have. And then all of a sudden, all the work started coming in. You know, I think God was testing me and saying, why are you being so petty when there's brothers and sisters that are dying on the street? Probably last night, you know, it was in the low 20s. I think it was like under freezing last night, you know, and there's people sleeping on the street right now, you know, many of them veterans. It's just not acceptable. You know, it's not acceptable. And I think that, you know, I hate to say this, but it's going to be up to us to change it. It's not going to be from the people that have the wealth. I think there may be some out there that, you know, that are good, but, you know, I've been in pitch rooms where they tell me not to talk about the humanitarian aspects of my project, to only talk about how the money is going to be made and how they're going to make their money. This is the world that we've gotten to, and it's very sad. I'll stop with that.
That's why I'm pitching the idea of go tiny, go rural.
I agree.
There's some other strategies that we can put out there as well.
Well, education, education has been bashed, but I will tell you, you know, they don't want us to be educated, okay? They don't want us to be educated. So all the people that are saying, you know, education is bad, you know, education, that's buying into the narrative, okay? That's buying into the narrative. Education is what's given me every single thing that I have. But for education, I would have nothing. So when you hear people saying that education is bad, it's not good, it's bullshit. It's literally drinking their Kool-Aid, you know? You know, a populace that is uneducated is easily controlled. Let me say that one more time. Uneducated populace is easily controlled. We have to, we have to hit ourselves. We have to teach ourselves. I teach innovation protection, and I have webinars. They're free. Why are they free? Because I want people to be able to protect their innovations. Because protecting your innovations leads to wealth. That's how the game is played. That's how the corporations do it. They protect innovation, and then they use that monopoly in order to gain wealth. And we need to do that. We need to teach our children and their children how to do that. And that's, you know, that's one of my missions, is teaching people how to protect innovation. The big, you know, the mission at hand right now is housing and feeding homeless vets. You know, that's my mission. And everything that I do from a commercial end, where everybody's salivating over these greenhouses and how much money they're going to make off of those, every single penny that comes from that, I'm going to push. First, I'm going to take care of my friends and family. I want all of my friends and family to have financial independence. As soon as I'm done with that, I'm going to start working towards, you know, the next layer, you know, people that I don't even know. And you know, if we all start doing that, eventually, like Chris said, you have to raise the lowest level in order to raise all the ships. If we don't address the people that have nothing right now, we will never be able to help the people that are one step above that, that are being brainwashed to hate the people that have nothing. You know, it's the biggest con game I've ever seen in my life. You know, they've got the people that have slightly more than you, right, hating on the people that have nothing, while the people that have everything are taking everything. It's, you know, it's sad, and it's a game that we can turn around. We can collaborate. We can start teaching our children how to protect their innovations, and we can start creating wealth for the people that don't have anything. And once we do that, you know what? It'll solve every problem on Earth. Just think about this. If every single human on Earth was able to create wealth from their innovations, that would create products and services all over the world, which means people, you know, in impoverished countries could create wealth. As soon as you do that, you solve all problems. You solve immigration, migration. People don't want to leave their countries. You know, people say, oh, this Mexican, you know, is coming here to take my job and take my women, and they're lazy. You know, I always kind of laugh. I'm like, oh, so they're lazy, but they're taking your jobs. That's kind of interesting. But, you know, I read a story about a man that walked 1,000 miles carrying his kid in order to cross the border to find a better life for his family. And you know what? I would do the same thing. I would do the exact same thing. So this is all completely and utterly related. Once we solve this problem of generating wealth from innovation, we will solve all the problems in the world.
All right.
And that's what I'm working towards.
Okay, and for people that are just tuning, that are just hearing us for the first time, Carlos, share with us, I guess, your innovations with the greenhouse as well as the carport.
Yeah, you know, my innovations, you know, to me were not that complicated. I started an aquaponic system, which is a very simple system where the water from the fish feeds the plants. You know, you pipe the water from the fish tank into the plants, and then the plants clean the water and put it back in the fish tank. Not complicated. I've taught elementary school kids how to do it, okay? It's a water pump, basically a water pump in a way to bring the water back into the fish tank. That's aquaponics. I saw that, and I said, this is really interesting to me as an engineer. So I decided to build one in my backyard, and then winter was coming. And I knew that my fish and plants were going to die if I didn't put them in a greenhouse. And I knew that the greenhouse had to be able to survive the winter. Okay, so this is what led me down the path that I'm on. So I started studying greenhouses. I'm an engineer. And I realized that the Chinese had figured out how to do that 200 years ago. I saw them growing food on the side of a mountain with 4 feet of snow outside. And they're growing strawberries and banana trees. And I looked at that and I said, this is incredible. So I built one out of a carport in my backyard. I built a passive solar greenhouse. It's basically a fully insulated greenhouse with vents on the lower south and upper north that allow this greenhouse to grow food with 4 feet of snow outside. And it worked. And then later on, you know, I realized that the reason they're not using these greenhouses commercially, because they're, you know, they don't require heating and cooling, you know, so you think everybody would be using them, right? but they're not, because half of the greenhouse is shaded. That's how it works. That's why it works, because half of it is shaded. That's what keeps it cool, cool in the summer and warm in the winter. The problem with the shade is you can't grow plants in the shade. But guess what you can grow in the shade? Mushrooms. And I had 5 years earlier to that had experimented with growing mushrooms, and I started experimenting with growing mushrooms as part of my aquaponic system, and it worked. All the experts told me that it wouldn't work, but I'm a hard-headed engineer. You can tell, when you tell me there's a problem, and it's an interesting problem to me, I know there's an invention waiting to happen. Every problem is an invention waiting to happen. So I solved the problem. I went in there and I said, you know what? The experts are telling me it's not possible, but I'm going to try it anyways. And I'm going to see why it doesn't work. Because if I can figure out why it doesn't work, I can figure out how to solve the problem. That's what I did as an engineer my entire career, solve problems. So I started growing mushrooms and they flourished. And I knew that I had to teach the world how to do it. And I made pictures and videos of every single step of my design. And then I started filing patents for it. Why did I file patents? Because I'm a patent attorney, and I know what happens when you don't protect your innovation. It gets taken. It's given away. When you invent something and you put it out there, like in a pitch room, for example, and it's not protected, guess what? You have just donated it to the world, which means now everybody can compete with you on your own invention. Think about that. You create something, and now everybody can compete with you. And let me ask you a question. How do you compete with a mega corporation when you're a tiny little person in your garage? You don't. You don't. And that's why innovation protection is the key of my mission. You know, right now sustainability is it, because we need, these greenhouses right now. I was told that we would need them. I was told that I need to teach people, and everything I do is free for personal and educational use. What does that mean? You want to feed your family? I'll teach you. Go to my YouTube channel. You build it. It's not complicated. If you have a question, I'll help you. But if you, if you're a corporation or a business that wants to take this idea and monetize it, let's talk. Let's share in the wealth. That's what we're supposed to do as humans. But the wealth that I get is going to go back to my mission, which is solving the problems. And sorry to be preachy, but, that's what I'm doing, And if you don't believe me, I've got 11 years worth of videos to prove it. And each one is dated. Every single video that I do, I date, 12, 22, 22, 12, 16, 22, 12, 13, I started in 2012 is when I started, and I've dated every single video since every video and picture I've captured and shared. So, right now there's lots of interest from the people that have all the wealth, because they're seeing the dollar signs. But I'm trying to be careful and make sure that the people that I associate with are the people that I want to associate with, not for the money, okay? You can have all the money on earth, if you're not the type of person that is trying to help and trying to, solve problems. I don't want your money, okay? I don't want your money. If you're the type of person that has money and understands what I'm talking about, let's talk, let's talk. But I'm going to do it. I'm ex-military. This is going to happen or I will die. And that's the only two options. And it's happening. We've got a project in Brazil coming up. They want to fly us down there to give a lecture on aquaponics, because Brazil is leading the world in sustainability and eco-villages and that sort of thing. I just got contacted by a lady in Costa Rica that wants me to do the same thing over there. But, I've got work to do here in Washington, D.C., Until I get every single veteran and homeless person not having to live in a tent, not having to live under a bridge, not having to sleep over a grate in the richest nation on earth, you know, that needs to be solved. And it's going to happen. It's going to happen. I was contacted by a lady in, you know, I after I left D.C., I went to the desert. I lived in Lancaster, California, the Mojave Desert for 6 years. That was the only way I could afford a house because, like D.C., L.A., unless you're like a multi-gazillionaire, you can't buy a house in L.A. You know, they're like $3, $5, $6, $10, $20, $30 million houses. So I commuted 75 miles one way just to own a house in the desert. But what I learned in the desert is evaporative cooling. You know, everything in life, you know, I always say life prepares you for life. Everything that happens in your life is to prepare you for your next step in your life. And I learned about evaporative cooling, swamp coolers. I don't know if you know what they are, but they're extremely simple. It's a box that has material around it, like wool or whatever, sitting in a tray, and the tray is like has a hole in the middle of it where it has a fan. And in the tray, there's water that gets pumped and gets and that water is pumped to that material, the wool, and the wool soaks in that water, and the fan sucks air from the outside that's very, very dry into the inside. And as the air gets sucked through that material, it condenses. And when water condenses, temperature drops. You know, it's all related. You know, as water gets condensed, it releases energy, and it makes hot on one end, cold on the other end. So basically, by sucking that hot, dry air through that wet fabric, you're cooling down the house. And we could keep our house at 60 degrees when it's 122 Fahrenheit outside. Think about that. Our house was like we would have to turn the swamp cooler off because it got so cold in there. And when I was in my greenhouse and I was sitting there going, "Wow, this greenhouse is getting really super hot, and the mushrooms are going to be cold and moist," I was like, "Whoa! If I put an evaporative cooler in here, all of a sudden I'm going to be able to grow mushrooms all year round." And that's what solved the problem with, you know, I believe that the invention that I created will allow large-scale passive solar greenhouses to flourish all over the earth. And these are greenhouses that grow everything a human needs to survive: fish, plants, mushrooms. If you're vegan, you grow koi fish. Koi fish sell for like $10,000 to $20,000 a fish when they're full grown. And that's, you know, that's my contribution to the planet and my contribution to Mother Earth. And that's my mission right now, is to build these and teach people how to build them and to feed the world, because it's possible. These greenhouses also produce soil. Okay, soil is how you green a desert. You know, right now with this technology, we could convert the Sahara Desert into an oasis, because once you start putting soil on sand, you can grow plants. Once you grow plants, it attracts the bugs. Once you grow plants, you can grow trees. Once you grow trees, you start bringing in water. Once you bring in water, you bring in wildlife. This is called permaculture. And it's not fairy tale. This is, you know, I can show you a video of a guy that greened a desert in China. He converted a desert into an oasis by doing what I just told you. So, you know, this is going to happen, and I think it's my purpose in life. And this, you know, everybody needs a purpose, and this is my purpose. This is why I believe I've escaped death more times than I can count. You know, I've been near death probably, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 times. I've had police officers point guns at me, you know, 2, 3 times in my life. I had my house robbed by crystal meth junkies in Sunnymead, where I was on the floor face down and they're talking about blowing my brains out. You know, I'm here for a reason, and I believe this is it. I've been upside down in cars like 3 times in my life, once as a baby when I was 6 months old. You know, life prepares you for life, and I've had a lot of pain. You know, like broken bones, broken collarbones, broken jaws, dislocated knees. You know, I felt pain. But it made me stronger, you know. It made me stronger. And I'm so glad that I connected with L.A. and Chris and now David. You know, thank you guys. We were meant to be connected.
David, what are some of the programs that you have on your TV network for Roku now?
Oh man, I create shows and programs. Like what you said about Don't Sell Mama's House, Grandma's House. That's gonna be a show. The beautiful thing about it, and Chris coming on too. The beautiful thing about it is. We virtual, so we can send you a link. We can take this conversation we're doing right now and bring it on a television channel. I have 60 channels, and pray that God will allow me to keep on. It's so hard because I don't have sponsors. You know, we don't have people who are I bring more people on for free than I do who pay, because a lot of people don't have money, and I don't turn them away. We're not traditional television, so we're streaming. So just like this, we're doing this on this podcast. All we do is add the video. Now we're on television. I create a television channel or show for it or spotlights for it. So I have something called Hello. Hello America is just like Good Morning America. And I would love for all of us come on the screen and we're talking about the city and changes. That's a good topic.
That's right.
Yeah, it'll be a beautiful topic for us. But how do we get people to help to give donations? So we got to say on the show, if you like what you're seeing, send a donation to the Pick TV Network. Just like on last night, my brother, he gave $20. He thought that was nothing. But that was like $20,000. That helped another channel to stay alive and the show stay alive. So it's not the small amount. That's given is at the right time, because $50 is just like $50,000 at the right time, and it was right time last night. You know, that was a big blessing. So I think because we're going to bring good content, good shows, our viewership will go up, and then we hopefully and pray that somebody will say, you know what, I'll give some money to help the network. That really blessed me, and that's what it's about. It's about giving something worth people's time and putting something out there that's not trash. How much trash is on TV? It's just ridiculous.
Too much.
Brother, I'll teach innovation protection on your channels, and that will bring in money. I will do that for you, and it'll help me too. You know, I mean, everything I do is word of mouth. Like all the work that I get as a patent attorney is word of mouth. I've never marketed. I've never advertised. And I will do that, and people, you know, I like the sort of pay what you can model. I think that's a very interesting model to me, you know, because some people don't have anything, right?
Right.
And why should we keep knowledge from people that don't have anything?
Yeah.
Those are the ones you need to empower the most, so that way they'll have everything.
Yes.
Yep.
They have a chance of getting it.
I love it, man. Let's make it happen. You know, I'm always opening the studio, you know, giving the links out and say, let's do it. Because I feel a bond here. I think maturity, conversation. We know we're talking about the city. We're talking about the changes. We're talking about, you know, revitalization. I think it's so important for us to continue like a series of this, because it's going to do a whole lot for people who don't know what's going on, especially selling your mom's house, or just because you see the dollar, see the bag, that don't mean you're supposed to grab it. It's the worst thing that we did is to sell my mom's house, because that's our legacy. When we sold that mom's house, if we would have rented it out, it could have been $5,000 a month for rent. We sold that house. We sold the birthright. And guess what? Spring Road now is a Gold Coast.
You know, it's funny that LA's got the Go ahead.
I was going to say the technique that they use, you know, I know from working at Nixon Peabody, you know, as a in urban development, what they do is they bring in, you know, they say you can buy this house for, you know, no money down for like pennies on the dollar, but you have to live in it and you have to make an agreement that you're going to fix it up. Now, you know, that's how they do it, see, because now somebody that has a good job, right, say at the Pentagon or wherever, right, now they can come in and get one of these houses for like nothing. Like I remember people saying they bought their house, like, you know, in Capitol Hill area that was the most, well, I think it spread further than that, but this is when Capitol Hill was just getting revitalized. And they were buying these houses, I think, for like around 80 grand or something like that. But you had to make a commitment that you're going to live in it. It couldn't be a rental property. It couldn't be an investment property. And you also had to make a commitment that you were going to put a certain amount of improvements in it. And, of course, the people wanted to do that anyways, right, because, you know, they were yuppies. You know, they wanted to have, you know, nicely painted house. And, you know, so they would come in and pay for the revitalization of the townhouse. And all of a sudden that house that they bought for $80,000 is worth $1.2 million or something crazy like that. That's how it was being done. It's probably still being done that way. Which is an opportunity if you have money, right? If you have money, there's opportunities.
Well, that's the thing. We've actually made opportunity through HUD, and I'm very thankful that David has so much experience working for HUD because he knows about the programs that I'm talking about. At least, what year was it that you were last in HUD? David, he might be busy, but he is with HUD, and there's been some national legislation passed.
His call dropped. Chris's phone dropped.
Oh, did it? Okay.
It just dropped. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's not a thing. He probably had another call come in, but there is money. You know, Ben Carson had passed legislation that if you're on Section 8, you can be a homeowner. You don't have to pay rent. We need everybody, and I think, you know, us doing what you, me and David, have talked about, you know, not only doing a spotlight, but doing a series, because we have so much. And now he's offering, you know, us to broadcast us what you're doing already, you know, 9 years of commitment. You know, I think this is just a beautiful little stepping stone to throw it on another platform and actually put video so people can see what we're out here doing. I think it'll be beautiful. You know, it's a real reality show. We're not making up.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know, to me, that's like, it'd be like surreal for real, you know?
let's see. Okay. Christmas is what, Sunday?
I ain't even sure. I am definitely not been keeping up with the holiday.
Okay, today's Wednesday, right?
Yeah, today's my 21st anniversary with my wife.
Well, congratulations.
We haven't been married 21 years, but it was 21 years ago today that we got together. And today's our golden anniversary. It's the 21st on our 21st. So,
well, congratulations on that.
You know, that's another feat. You know, look at the divorce rate in the United States. We just had our 25th in October, and you know, most people aren't staying married that long. So God bless you, Chris, for, you know. You know, it's work, right?
Well, some people don't last,
you know,
90 days.
That's right. And, you know, that's because people don't know how to communicate. People don't know how to reciprocate.
And that is a key situation to having a successful relationship with anybody, because you have to be honest. And you don't have to be brutally honest, because you don't have to say, and, you know, oh, I'm sorry. I don't know if you heard me or not, but
no, I hit the wrong button. I was supposed to try to mute myself.
But yeah, I mean, it. You know, as far as relationships, you know, I look at it as every person I meet. You know, what kind of relationship are we going to have? Because I'll treat you like a spouse. I mean, you'll know everything that's going on with me if that's the kind of relationship we're going to have. Because I am an open book. I would rather everybody know who and what I am, what I do, where I go. Because I'm not trying to hide anything. You know, I'm not running around with a cloak over my head so you can't see me, but I don't want to be seen. It's not about me. But the actions that I can go out and do, what I can make a reaction out of, those are what I want people to see. And that's what I think this PICTV will do. You know, this brings reality to the real. And I see that people love to watch, even if it's court television. It doesn't matter if it's a reality of some sort and it's happening. They'll watch it. But imagine reality. People will be crying watching our shows, period, because they're going to see the people, the lives that we change, cry. And it's not going to be tears of sadness or sorrow. It's going to be straight happiness and joy, and realize that they're not going to be ignored. You know, I think it would be, I mean, I had seven stations, and or you know to seven different shows that I could run, and I thought that was something, but 60, that's amazing. And he was told that he wasn't going to be what he said he was going to be, and that's because he's become his own. And he's got his inspirations, and you'll get to hear his story. But it's the point that he's in position to be able to catapult what we're trying to say by giving a visualization of not just us talking, because that's 40 megabytes of information per second going into your brain. But if you visualize it, you got 200,000 megabytes of information that you're processing per second, you know, and we've been talking for, you know, hours. So This is the part of, you know, what does time mean, and what kind of value did you get out of it? Because what we're doing for free, but we're doing it to change you and me. And that's what I appreciate the most out of all of you. And, you know, to me, just because we haven't met face-to-face don't mean that, you know, I don't feel for what goes on in your life, what's going on with you on a daily. And Carlos knows it, and he's going through a lot. But at the same time, he gets
Chris, David is back. David is back. He called back in.
All right, awesome.
Yeah,
David. I had a question for you, David. I was wondering when it was, what year was the last year you worked for HUD?
Oh man, I was talking for 5 minutes, but y'all was, and I didn't know I was gone, man. So let me put the
I did the
old man.
I did the same thing. You gotta hit the one button.
I was talking for 5 minutes, man. Hey, thank God nobody's watching me, man. I'm talking to myself, man.
Well, hey, that's all right.
We're still hearing you, brother.
You were
still coming through.
Yeah, Yeah, man. So I didn't leave Hudson on my own. We had a contractor who came in, and they wanted to let one person go after 12 years, and that was me out of nine people. And I was like, wow. So while I was at HUD, I was in the printing department, so I saw everything from beautification, money to grant money. I was working in printing, you know, so everything that comes through from the secretary, Dave, I need 10 copies of this, to the budget, the 16 books that we had to push up to the fifth floor. I was the one. We had to work, me, and I can't say my coworkers' names, but all three of us had to work all weekend. And on that Tuesday, I was the one who pushed into the fifth floor, 16 books with trillions of dollars going to the Capitol Hill. And I know everything that was in there, money going to Texas, California, Florida, all of this stuff, man. So there's no shortage of money. We had 3,000 people working in that building. I knew 2,500. They knew me by name. Everybody knew Dave. I was working downstairs, and people would come down there. I was the one when they had big events from the vice president to president by at that time Barack Obama, who I did see, shook his hand. We did the programs for him. So I'm the one. Hey, we need 10 more programs. I'm in the print and taking my stairs. Everybody see me walking right through the door like a celebrity, giving them to them on the stage. And I gained so much favor by being there and meeting so many people. It was one of the best experiences in my life. So I still got people who work there, I know, who call, who I'm connected with, who I can make it. The problem is that we don't have access to stuff. There's no shortage of money. It's access. We're not invited to the party. There's so much flowing right now. Like if me and Chris were in that game, Chris, I need $500,000. Okay, Dave, it's on the way. Make sure Dave gets that before the end of the day. And tell Ann to make sure on the back end, he don't have to take care. We'll take care of that on the back end. That's another call. It's a dirty game. That money game on that level is just, it's crazy. It's unbelievable. It's greed. And it's dear, and I've seen it, and I know this.
I was going to ask you if you knew about the legislation that Ben Carson got pushed through right before he was done, and that was if you're on Section 8, you can actually become a homeowner, and you can build new construction with HUD money now, and you could never do that before.
No, I was gone. When I left in 2016, he was just coming in. I know
right.
nothing about
okay.
that.
So you're saying good key numbers because that's why I'm wondering. Now, it happened
yeah.
after 2016 because
yeah.
I gave it to him in 2017. So
yeah, I was gone.
In 2017, they got the program, and I just asked them to make it into legislature so we could do this. And now we can take every person that's paying a slumlord and turn them into their own landlord.
Wow.
We have that ability. So I'm
Great.
Glad to have you for what experience you do have and what connections you do have, because we do need to have a talk. Because back in October, I got Peoria COC, the Continuum of Care, and I know you know what that is through HUD. Peoria, Illinois, the Continuum was scared of me because they were afraid of losing their jobs and losing your funding, you know, at the time. And they had one comment to say after I answered every problem they had. And they said, what are we going to do when you empty all of our shelters? And I said, not house people, because you don't know how. And if you don't build, you know, these 230 houses, I'm going to. If you don't build, you know, 400 affordable houses, I'm going to. But I'm telling you, since you're scared of me and you're not going to do anything with me, you go get the money and you build it. And they did, and we just won a national award from HUD in October or in September.
Beautiful.
So that did happen, and now that we know that, you know, it's a proven fact, we've seen that it's changed that community, Now it's time to change all the communities and make that the standard. Instead of the 15%, you know that number. 15% is what they say you have to help to get your community money and your grant money. And what about the 85? So that's where I went to, and I said, look, I'll take the 85, and y'all handle the 15. I said, because, you know, they said, you and whose army is going to do this? And I was like, I'll take the Salvation Army, because then people have nowhere to go but up.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to fight for it, because once they got it, they're not going to lose it again. And they're not going to lose it because you take it from them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a lot done. We got some legislation done in California as well. And I got Newsom to build 42,000 steel frame temporary homes for the homeless with a $5.8 billion budget, not including any city's budget that they have to attack it. So we're about to go to L.A., and I'm glad you just did a show. I'm gonna spotlight you a little bit. He just did a show on Skid Row 2 days ago. So you'll be able to go back and watch it on PICTV. To me, what he just done was the culmination of Here Comes the Series.
Wow.
I had heard from a realtor the other day that was explaining to me how that whole sort of system is designed, where the, this money becomes available for, like, housing, right? However, the people that end up getting the contracts are typically somehow related through lobbying or whatever to the politicians. And this one lady was telling me that they were charging something like $200,000 per home or something crazy like that. Chris, you may know more about that, but what she was telling me was sort of eye-opening, you know, and it didn't surprise me because, you know, just like that relief money that came out, and there was companies that didn't really need it that kind of soaked it all up. And, you know, that's a problem where you've got, you know, companies that are taking they're getting – they're cutting in line, basically. And I don't know how to address that because our system is kind of a bit corrupted right now.
Well, that's where we the people stand up together. We all have a voice. And if we all stand there and say this, those politicians, I found out something right from the politicians' mouths. So that from our senators, congressmen, it doesn't matter. They said, if you're an elected official, they said, because I asked them if they were going to support my project. So, when you know, just, are you going to support this project? And they said, Chris, if I don't support your project, he says, you do realize, and there was two of them standing there, a senator and a congressman, and they said, you know you can fire us, right? But you can't stand alone. If you stand at my door alone and you're telling me that I don't work for you and all this, I can continue to go to work. But if you're two or more standing at my door and you say, I don't work for you because you're not doing what I say, you can fire me, not vote me out, send me home. When we put politicians in place and we don't sit back and get involved in what they're working on, that's our mistake. And we, the people, are the government. But we have to stand united and speak together. We have to do it together to get them to go. But I've got bipartisan, 100%. I've passed legislation that went unanimous. I don't care if you're a Democrat or liberal or a Republican, a whatchamacallit. I don't care. They all voted yes. Because if you give them a reason they can't say no, there's no way they're going to, because they're going to look bad doing it. Now, this is stuff that's happened. But there's so much more that we can make happen. But we, the people, not just single voices, that's why we're on here and we're sharing what we have so that all of you have it. And now you have it. What are you going to do with it?
of you getting the clue that you are the answer. And we just need to hear it. So please voice up, you know, call in, get involved in what we're talking about, get involved in the show that we're about to be able to air with David. This is going to be amazing to give real TV to you in reality.
Yeah, and I love the diversity, man. We bring together not one culture, not one race. We all one blood, man. We bleed red. If
That's
I'm
right.
hungry.
We're the human race. We're the human race. We're human beings, but we're not being human, David.
That's right. If I'm hungry and I haven't eaten in 7 days, and any of you guys bring me some food, doesn't matter what color you are, what race you are, religion you are, doesn't matter. If you help me get some food to survive. So why are we fighting over race, creed, color, religion, background? I'm starving, and you come in to bring me some food. That has no
nationality
nationality on it, man. So I can't wait till we do this show, man. I'm ready, man. I'm excited about it. You know, we bring value, we bring content, we bring education, we bring inspiration, we bring knowledge. We bring it all, man. And everybody in this room.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just hoping you were ending right there. I was going to say, and we're going to bring humanity, okay?
Yeah.
And that's going to be our palms up. You know, when we start that video, everybody's going to be waving, and you're going to put the palm out there because everybody's palm is pink. And when they see that, they're not going to see any other color.
Wow.
They're going to see that.
Wow. Wow.
You know, in the military, you know, there's no race or color because, you know, I had brothers from every nationality. We had guys from Alabama. We had brothers from South Carolina. You know, I'm Ecuadorian. You know, there's no color there because when you're relying on each other, you know, your color doesn't matter. It's just whether they're there for you or not, you know. And this is part of the reason, you know, I do like, you know, when I meet other military folks, you know, they understand, you know, they understand that there is, you know, like you said, we all bleed red, right?
Yeah. And it's a beautiful thing, man, when you can see diversity, especially today. You know, when we bring people who've been seasoned, all of us, we're not in our 20s, we're not teenagers anymore. So what we're doing is we're talking about timelines in our life that 10, 15, 100 years later, these people can see the videos that we're doing, YouTube. You can go 100 years back in time and see the 1900s because somebody captured a moment, and you can – put it in history, and that search bar will find it. So what we're doing today, when we do our shows and series, we're talking about our kids and grandkids looking at it, you know, and the legacy that we're going to leave behind is cemented. It's cemented in something. And that's a beautiful thing that we can do something that our parents and our loved ones, that experience can come alive again. We're talking about the city. We're talking about the changes. We're talking about helping people. We're talking about going somewhere to make the world a better place. Before we leave this earth, I really believe God, he knew this moment, y'all. God knew before we woke up this morning, we'll be in this setting. We'll be talking about this. It's going to be manifested. He already knows. And who knows, you know, how many lives we're going to change and who lives we're going to touch before we leave the planet. My whole prayer is before I leave this earth, I want to try to make this place make a better place, man. And
it's
that time is
be.
Really right.
It's going to be. It's going to be. And we're going to give the land back to our children. This stuff was gone before we were ever born, and our children are going to own it, and they're never going to get it taken from them. There'll be a place for them to live. You know, when you hear L.A. talk about the chessboard, and 67 squares on the board, and two squares is where all the population of America live. squares are sitting unoccupied or rural. And when you look at 47% of that being never occupied by a human, there is so much land out here. And it's time, you know, not for us to change the beautification of it, but make Eden. And we make it from earth. We don't make it from the trees that keep us, you know, the carbon from getting caught. We put more trees in the ground. You know, we don't. Trees are beautiful. They're alive, and they bring you shade. They'll cool your house. They do all kinds of things, but they'll cool you off just getting underneath them. They'll cool an animal off, and we've got to be the change we want to see. And I think, you know, the collaboration of these beautiful human beings that I've met over my journeys of life, you know, I can't wait. And then I have no idea what the adventure is going to come, but I know there's going to be excitement and there's going to be joy.
Yep. I was trying to send you something right now, man. I did a series, a short film for like 5 minutes or less. And one of them I did was When Trees Cry, talking about the beautiful, beautiful leaves that were on in August in D.C. And I recorded this, and now it's October, November, December. The leaves are gone. The trees are, like you said, producing oxygen, shade, beautiful, beautiful leaves, but now the tree is barren. But that doesn't mean that tree is not going to come back in the spring and do the same thing over again. It's going to come back. It just lost all those friends that was on those trees. And I was thinking about that when you said it, man. And I'm going to send you the link. And if you want to see it, go to YouTube, put in the search bar, the Pick TV Mini Movies. And I got about 13 short films, just 5 minutes or less, some 3 minutes. And I just record with nature and talk. And I give all the glory to God. Pick TV Mini Movies on YouTube. Just when you see it, and you'll see When Trees Cry. I think that's about 5 minutes or less.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
I'm the type of person, man, the longer I live on this planet, and I don't know how long I got, and we don't know how long nobody has, I just want to do something today better than I did yesterday. And I want to help more people today than I did yesterday. I want to do something that's bigger than money. And what is that? That's something that will put a smile on God's face. It doesn't cost a dime to check on somebody and say, how you doing? I haven't heard from you in a long time. Do you need a toy for a kid? I got some extra ones right here. I'm going to the dollar store. You need something. $20 last night. And I'm going to say it, and I'm going to say it again today. That $20 was like $200 or $2,000. What was seen small to him, it really helped our network to come on and stay on. I didn't say nothing to nobody. But when you turn it on today, the thing is on the stag on TV.
People don't understand.
People do not understand. It's the little things in life, y'all. It's the little things we're going to do to change the world. I'm getting too passionate, man. I gotta set it down.
That's why you're not, man.
You know, brothers, I got to tell you, I'm in my greenhouse right now. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. We can hear you.
Okay, outside it's 60 degrees. I'm in my greenhouse. It's almost 85. Literally, it's like an oasis. I've got a banana tree here growing. My catfish are eating the food right now, and the goldfish.
Now,
I got these greens that are freaking gigantic
right now, brother. Imagine it being on TV right now, brother.
I know. I could
be
showing everybody this.
It. Yeah.
And the love, man, and the energy, and the passion, and the tears. Four grown men. Four grown men on the television, not fighting and fussing and cursing and sexing. We're trying to change the world to be a better place. Are we rich? No. We have more inside than we do outside. And we're taking out a little bit, and we're sharing it to the world. I mean,
That's at least.
I think that's sweet, man. That's it's a beautiful thing, man. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah,
all I know.
Maybe that might be another show we'll do. We'll call it Least. Loving Everyone, All Stronger Together.
Please write
and
that
And then
down,
we ask
man.
Him. Then we ask him, what's the least you can do?
Brother Chris is full of acronyms, by the way. That brother has, he's a poet.
Hey, I feel like
we've all heard
Capitol
him talk,
Hill.
And he can talk poetry.
I feel like, man, we on Capitol Hill, man. We just talking to get better and better, man. We not even spending the money, man.
And I'm the protector, brothers. My job is to protect you guys. That's what I do.
That's
I protect.
Right.
Oh, man. Can you imagine they on Capitol Hill talking about this budget, talking about passing this law? They spending 24 hours in one room, man, and getting nothing done.
If we had that, the amount of money they spend in one day, just think, you know, that's a great, incredible point. If we had the money they just spend in one day talking, we could build 1,000 houses.
That's where I want to put that challenge out for every elected official. They need to sleep one night outside in a box. They need to wear someone else's shoes. They need to wear someone else's clothes. And when they reach in their pocket, there is no cell phone and there is no money. And then we'll talk about it the next day.
Wow. Wow. That is the
biggest
thing.
That would be a great challenge.
That's
hey,
been
brother,
my challenge on every podcast.
You're gonna take it.
I put it out there. I don't know why, but every time I'm on the air, I put it out. And I was on a newscast that had a senator that done the, you know, the announcement in the beginning, and this is quite a big broadcast, and it's right there in North Carolina, and he done the first part of the announcement, and then they introduced me, and I got 30 minutes, and I answered a problem that they said never been answered, and I said, well, as soon as you're done talking, I'll give you the answer. He says, I'll shut up right now. But the point was, is when I asked that politician if he'd stay a night in a box, and he's like, it'd be tough for me to say no to that challenge right now because he's on video. It was a video podcast. It's a news show going on, and it goes on every day. But they talk about world news as well, but they talk about, you know, what it is to fix the problems. And I had no idea. I had someone mention the 17 things that the United Nations wanted to address. And one day I pulled it up on our phone here, and I read it off. And what was so funny is in our two-hour podcast, answered all 17 of those things. And we didn't know what they were. Until I spoke of them. But when I said them, we all had to agree that we just talked about that. So we know what we need to do. Not just we, the people here on this podcast, we, the people, know what we need to do. But it's what are we going to do? Are you going to get a clue that it's you that it takes to make this happen? Mm-hmm. It's not about me. It's about we, taking that M and turning it into a W and changing the world. That's what it takes. Let's take the blinders off.
Chris?
Let's get rid of the color. Stop talking race unless you're talking human race. If you're a human being, start being human. Think about those two words, human being, being human. They mean two totally different things. All right, go ahead, brother.
And, Chris, with that, you've got the last word of the day. See you guys tomorrow.